You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Every game is a new experience, and I think, you know, every game has its own characteristics in different ways. So, you know, every game is, you know, a new goal to accomplish. You have to have a short memory and move on to the next one. And that's what we've done, and that's, you know, how we've been able to, you know, get two in a row. But, you know, we know game six isn't going to be easy. You know, it's going to be tough there in L.A., but, you know, we're ready. We're ready for it.
Riding high here on today's episode of Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. I cover the Suns and the NBA for SB Nation as well as Dime Magazine. And you can follow me on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. But most importantly, you can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On PHX Suns, where you can tell me which Devin Booker shot was your favorite in his 30-point night in Game 5. Also, folks, make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your audio. I know I have a lot of new folks in the show lately, and I'm excited to have you, but make sure you stick around by getting that subscribe button clicked on. Make sure you're following, whatever, and I will show up right in your feed every single Monday through Friday, and some other stuff here and there, but we are here to talk about that miraculous Game 5 victory, 30-point win, 115-85, capped off by, yes, Booker's 30 himself in 33 minutes, 13 of 23 from the field. We'll get into all of that, what made Booker's night go so well, what the Suns were able to do to capitalize against these Los Angeles Lakers, and obviously get into the Chris Paul situation a little bit and start to look ahead. We don't have much time until Game 6 in Los Angeles on Thursday night, so we will, as we have all series, keep things moving. Today's show, folks, is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, and stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in the show. So, when we look at this game, there are so many things that went right that it can almost feel difficult to know where to start. I obviously talked about Booker. You heard from him at the top of the show, but I'll start with a couple things, because I talked with Gina Mizell on Tuesday morning's show. This will be going up in the wee hours of the night on Tuesday. After that, it feels like a lifetime ago that I spoke with her. What we talked about, though, was that it felt as if the Suns were starting to figure some things out offensively against this Lakers team. Now, I'm going to give the caveat, like, do not mistake me here. I know that having Anthony Davis out of this game really affected things. We also saw Marc Gasol get into foul trouble early and stay in foul trouble and only able to play 10 minutes. And then the fourth quarter of this game was not competitive. Most of the third quarter wasn't either. So is it the most representative thing in the world? No. But we were right, Gina and I, to say that. And what we saw were not only 30 huge points from Booker, and I'll break down a little bit of what I felt like was working for him there, but we also saw a lot of characteristics of the Suns' offense churning. And I mean churning in a good way. They were getting the shots that they love to get, that this offense is designed to get. And here's what I mean. So 29 assists on 43 made field goals. Very, very good. Only 4 turnovers. I mean, this is the type of thing we were marveling at when Ricky Rubio came to Phoenix last season. Oh, wow, look at the single-digit turnover nights for this team. And, you know, both Rubio and Booker getting in double digits in assists and all that. Like, this is the Monty Williams offense, but to do it in a playoff game, in a must-win playoff game against the number one rated defense in the NBA, that is an entirely different thing and really, really remarkable. So 29 assists to 4 turnovers. A few other signs we saw. One is getting up 42 three-pointers. Very huge. We saw that would be a pretty good correlation with winning games for this Suns team. If they can get those threes, a lot of the time when we saw their offense get bogged down, it wasn't generating those open threes, and that could be a really bad sign. So yes, they only made 14. They only made a third of their threes when it was all said and done, but getting those threes. All of these are green lights for what the Suns want to do on offense, and that's been the case all year, really, ever since Monty Williams got here. So those are reasons to believe that this was real. This was not just Booker going off. And the other big reason here to be optimistic, in my opinion, from a scoring standpoint, is Cameron Payne looked awesome. And so even to just say it was Booker as a scorer is unfair to Cam Payne. This guy continues to just be absurdly good. If you want to talk about things that have been figured out, Payne is completely unafraid. And this was true when Davis was healthy, less so when Davis was actually in the game. It felt like we saw a lot of minutes in the first four here where Payne tends to be on an opposite rotation from Davis, so that did help. But look, we're not going to pick nits here. This is a strength that the Suns have exploited, that Payne himself is largely responsible for exploiting. He's just driving into the teeth of this Lakers defense every single time that he can, whether that's in transition, whether that's in the pick and roll, whether that's attacking a closeout. And getting into the teeth that way. It's remarkable. It's efficient. He did it in an efficient way today. 7 of 11 from the field. He actually missed a couple of errant ones, I thought, in the third and fourth quarter when the game was not competitive. So I think he maybe made 6 of 9, 7 of 9 to start this game. And all of that really, to me, is coming from his ability. Well, first of all, his quickness. I mean, he's quick, he's crafty around the rim. He can get there, and he can get it done when he is there. So those are not to be overlooked. But a big part of it to me, in terms of how the Lakers are guarding this guy, is that he is making them respect his three-point shot. Like, you can't guard Cameron Payne without closing out on him, without sticking to him off the ball and closing out to him when he catches it. And you have to respect the pull-up three. Like, him building himself into the three-point shooter that he has is such a huge part of why he has exploded this way. We saw it in the bubble. We were seeing it again this season and in this series. And that is, I think, what set up the ability to drive on whoever was at the rim for the Lakers, Drummond or Gasol. And so he deserves an immense amount of credit. That, to me, is not going anywhere. That, to me, is how the Suns have survived this up and back and forth and around and down and just, honestly, miserable experience of trying to figure out what is going on with Chris Paul and how it is going to affect the series. Well, when the Suns have this guy in their back pocket to put the team on his back and make a run, and we saw even in that game three that got pretty ugly in the third quarter that Payne was the guy to cut it back to single digits in the fourth. So he's very much momentum proof. He is a walking run, and he has come up huge. The Suns went on. It was with Chris Paul in parts, but speaking of runs, the Suns went on a 14-0 run after going down 10-5 in this game and took a 9-point lead. They completely turned the game after a few unorthodox and not very good-looking possessions to start. I had been saying, and I ended up being right, although I very much doubted myself as the first quarter was playing out, that the team to control the first quarter and really gain the momentum out of that opening 12 minutes has been the winner in every game. That proved to be true again, in large part because of these two guys. Payne with that energy boost and Devin Booker, who scored 14 points and again was getting the Lakers into foul trouble, was making shots from all over the floor. And we'll get to more of some of those looks he was getting to close out the show, but it was Payne, it was Booker, and it was the defense in this game. And a big part of that that ability to get it done without Chris Paul. So I do want to dive more into what we saw from him. We did get a bit of information out of him, both from his reaction on the floor as well as what he said post-game. So I want to give that to you and obviously take a look ahead to close out the show. More on Booker there. I think I'll give you a little bit more of what I saw from Booker. And then the defense, I do want to talk about, because as much as they scored 115, they also kept the Lakers to 85, and those things are very, very interconnected. So all of that to come, but let's take first a quick break for the Ultra Player of the Week. You've been hearing about these all season, and man, are the stakes even higher when it comes playoff time. This week's Michelob Ultra Player of the Week is DeAndre Ayton. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I have not given this guy his flowers. We all know the history. You all know, if you've been listening to this show or reading me, that I was not the biggest supporter of the decision that the Suns made in the 2018 draft. We don't have to rehash that, though, because I'm here to eat crow. DeAndre Ayton has been playing with an intense competitive spirit. He seems to really get joy out of these matchups when things are at their biggest. We saw it even dating back to his rookie season, defending guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo with Milwaukee or LeBron James even. This Lakers team. So that's what struck me more than anything, is that DeAndre Ayton is really getting happiness and fulfillment. It really does seem like from competing at the highest level. That is not something we would have expected from this guy. Inconsistency has been in many ways his middle name. The first line of the scouting report in his section for opponents. This is just not a player that you could trust every night. That has changed completely in this series. In game five here, he didn't have to do a ton because his teammates were helping get it done. But look, Drummond has been largely ineffective in this series. Gasol, really only a three-point shooter, occasional rim protector. The Lakers have no answer for DeAndre Ayton, and he has brought it every single night. Enjoyment isn't the end game, guys. It's the whole game. And at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, Michelob Ultra is reminding you that it's only worth it if you enjoy it. So enjoy this run. DeAndre Ayton surely is. We love what we've seen from him. He is the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. Let's keep it rolling here with more from the latest installment of the Chris Paul saga. This happened in the third quarter. Wes Matthews tangled up with Chris Paul for a rebound, and very, very ugly scene ensues. Paul collapses to the ground, limps slash almost crawls over to the Suns bench, where he falls in a heap at the feet of his teammates and gestures before he does that to what I initially took to mean the, like, paramedics, like, give me a stretcher here, or I'm gonna need crutches, something. And I was really like, are we about to see a genuine, like, scary injury here? And it didn't play out that way. I mean, it did in the fact that Paul was on the ground for a good 2-3 minutes as the Suns get the timeout and the officials review the play for a flagrant foul on Wes, and we would come to find out later that both Chris and Jay Crowder convened with Wes Matthews. You know, they both said that he expressed regret, apologies, whatever, and said it was totally unintentional and was wanting to figure out if Chris was okay, all that stuff. So no foul play there. Booker backed that up as well, but obviously a very scary moment, and Chris Paul gets up eventually, sort of with some help from teammates, and goes and shoots the free throws, makes them both. He did get fouled on the play. The Lakers were in the bonus, so the Suns get the free throw. Chris Paul makes them both and goes to the locker room immediately. He did come back out at one point in, I believe, early fourth quarter, was able to be around his teammates, was able to coach from the bench a little bit and do the things we know Chris Paul to do, but did not come back in the game, mostly because there was no need. The Suns were up 30. I saw some fans critiquing Monty Williams for that post game. I think it's fair, it's valid, it's worth questioning, but at the same time, guys, like, We just don't see that stuff in the third quarter of most any NBA game. Monty has always been very reticent to bench his starters in those sort of blowout moments anyway, but we surely really, really rarely see that in a playoff game, let alone a must-win big game five. Like, guys just don't go to the bench. You see it through to the end until it's really, really out of hand, and that's what we saw. When the fourth quarter hit, the starters didn't play the rest of the game, but I don't have an issue with Chris Paul being out there because, look, the guy was plus 34 in his 23 minutes. He was a huge driver of the Suns' success. He was finding hit-ahead passes with his teammates, a big part of why Booker was able to score so well in the opening frame, why the Suns were able to generate those threes and get those assists that we talked about in the first segment. So, look, as much as hindsight allows us to see clearly, okay, you know, he did get injured, there's the obvious counter to that, which is, what if they said, let's play it carefully with Chris Paul, who, mind you, hit a ballsy pull-up three to cap off the Suns' run in that third quarter, just a few moments. Actually, it was in the second quarter to put the Suns up 21, but he had just hit that shot. He looked better. And so if we had seen a moment where Monty said, no, let's play it cool, let's be careful here, and it starts to fall apart, suddenly the Lakers are within reach, imagine the criticism that he would have gotten. And imagine if it resulted in a loss. Like, you cannot chance the win that you have for, you know, the potential of greater security afterwards. So that's where I come down on it. However, we did get good news after the game, as everybody who spoke. Monty Williams was sort of trying to calm the waters a little bit by saying, you know, I don't want to give an official update, although he did say he basically expects that Chris Paul will be okay. He said that he had a conversation with Chris Paul when Chris Paul returned to the floor, in which CP3 told Monty that he had the feeling in his arm, which is a good thing. Sorry, I was looking at the tweet to make sure that I had it right. I was live tweeting the press conference, and Chris Paul said, a little bit banged up, but I'll be all right. Obviously playing it down. Jay Crowder says he'll probably be able to go. So look, it seems after all of that, as if Chris Paul is likely to be in the same situation heading into game six as he was heading into every game since game one, which is night and day or around the clock treatment. A lot of eyes on him in the opening moments of the game, and a big question mark about what productivity the Suns can expect from him, but nobody's ruling him out for game six. Everybody seems optimistic that he can continue to nurse this thing as he did. The last bit of clarity we did get, and the last thing I want to note for you guys as we keep this going, is Chris Paul did, first of all, he was grabbing at his neck as the timeout ensued during that official review of the initial foul that caused the re-aggravation of this thing. He was grabbing at his neck. The medical staff was sort of, you know, touching at it, poking at it, messing with it to see what was going on there. And he said post-game something very interesting, which is that he's been in communication with Kyle Lowry, a player who I did not expect the name to come up today, but you go back and Kyle Lowry suffered a very, very similar injury. You can look at it on my Twitter feed, at BrendanClean14. I tweeted out the video, YouTube video, of that injury. You could look it up yourself. It's not hard to find. It was last February. He drives into the basket, gets fouled by somebody else, and then Serge Ibaka, who was under the rim waiting for, you know, a lob or whatever, Lowry falls into Ibaka and sort of like the back of his knee, calf, ankle area, and completely crawling around, excruciating look on his face, like very, very, very similar to what we saw from Chris Paul today, or in game one and then again today. And he said that Lowry's injury is similar to his and that he's been asking him about how to handle it and what to do. It very much to me seems like an issue of pain management. Chris Paul was with a ice brace thing. Hyper ice, I think, is what folks think that that was. I believe you. Around his entire body, upper body, during the time after he came back out onto the floor and was just on the bench. And so it feels like the conversations with Lowry and the treatment we're seeing play out in real time during these games is, it's just, let's not let this hurt too badly, really, more than anything. And so we'll see. But as long as he can gut that out, I imagine he will continue to play. He did remark that he would like for the Suns to take care of business in Game 6 so that they can avoid having to play again. And obviously that's another added level of I guess, urgency to winning this one. But yes, Lowry's injury was very similar, and the Raptors, for what it's worth, listed that injury as a shoulder and neck issue. So the Suns have not done that. They have maintained right shoulder contusion. They leaked to the media that it was a stinger. If we're to believe Paul, that his injury is similar to what Lowry went through and what we saw Paul grabbing at today, the neck is a big part of this, which just makes you even more scared. That's a freaky thing to happen. And look, the guys, the look on Paul's face, both when he got hurt and when he was talking to us post-game, he's not messing around. He kept saying how scared and freaked out he was. I can imagine that. So look, at the end of the day, like, we don't want this guy to suffer a major long-term injury that's going to jeopardize the future of his career. And when it starts to be a neck and a nerve and a whatever type of thing, that has to cross your mind. But as long as he is able to gut it out and the team staff clears him to play, I expect he will be out there. So let's get to Game 6. Let's talk about what this will look like. We don't know the injury situation. It appears that Anthony Davis will likely be out, and we don't know what we will get from LeBron James. All of that said, though, there are plenty of things we took away from this one that we can continue to see. We will continue to see in Game 6 back in LA. So let's get to that in just a second. First, though, a quick word from Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the planet, my favorite protein bar. I'm sure, I know many of you have tried Built Bars from hearing me talk them up for so long. And what I know is that you know your favorite, because everybody who's ever tried a Built Bar knows their favorite without a doubt. They have combo packs, sample packs, where you can, they call them mixed boxes, just so you know what to look for on the website. You get two each of the 9 flavors, or you can get a jumbo pack with just your favorite. I recommend that mixed box. Get to know Built Bar, get to love Built Bar, find your favorite, and then go whole hog on those. That is what I did. Double chocolate has quickly emerged as a front runner. I love it because it's low in sugar, it's low in calories, but it's high in protein. They're not too sweet. They don't get you in that weird crummy feeling, I can't move around because I've eaten too much kind of mood. No, they power you through a workout. They get you ready after a workout to regenerate, build that muscle, whatever you are doing. Or if you just get hungry sometimes, they are incredibly healthy. They're just a nice snack. They taste like a candy bar, but they are not. So if you're a sweet tooth or a snacker, this is perfect for you too. So check it out, guys. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 when you make your purchase to get 15% off your order. Not first order, next order. You can use it anytime. Promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Okay, last but not least, BetOnline is a delightful sponsor of the show. I love to tell you about BetOnline because I love to go on BetOnline. Anytime that I'm looking for odds, for a fun prop, for something to throw some money at, I go straight to BetOnline. They make it easy, it's simple, they have news, sign-up bonuses, and contest info all in one place. They're constantly updating their lines. My favorite is they have legitimate WNBA lines, which not many of these online books do. BetOnline has you covered there. So guys, this is the busiest part of the sports year. We have the MLB and NBA and NHL on every single night. You have fights every weekend. We have tennis and golf matches constantly, and the NFL is not too far away. You can get some early props there. I've talked to you about Kyler Murray for MVP. Look at all of it. And take advantage of our offer. Go to the website right now. Make an account. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, locked on, one word there, when you make your first deposit to get a 50% welcome bonus straight to your account. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON when you make your first deposit to get a 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Okay, so let's zoom out a little bit. The Suns are up 3-2. Just maybe hit that 15 reverse rewind button and just hear me say that again so that it feels real, so that you can bask in it. That's where we are. That's where we are. And that means, so the Suns obviously have home court advantage. They are up. They only need to win one, and they have a home game to do that, right? So that's the landscape. However, LeBron James is a hell of a player to X out of the playoffs. He has never in his life lost in the first round. He has been in the finals for the better part of a decade. Outside of his first Lakers season, he has been to the finals every single year of this last decade, and has been a mainstay in every big moment of the entire NBA for years and years and years. That's what the Suns are up against. They know that. And so let's start to think about what Game 6 and 7 could look like. Just a reminder, though, first, folks, on our Road to the Finals coverage, our NBA playoff segments, all playoffs long, are brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it, and at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. So let's set the stage there again. What I'm looking for is who else steps up for the Lakers. And that's multifold here. So 24 points on 9 of 19 shooting. LeBron effectively could only score when he made his threes. And he made a lot of them, 6 of 10. But he was 3 of 9 from two-point range and didn't get to the foul line once. Also had three turnovers. Minus 24. So that's not an accident. I think LeBron went into this game probably feeling comfortable that they could still win two to close out the series in seven. We saw him do that against the Pacers. Much younger player then, a much healthier player then, has suffered a groin and ankle injury, multi-week injuries since that Cleveland-Indiana series where he did that. But he has that level of confidence. So I don't necessarily think he went into this game in full attack mode. We've seen him at other points in the series be way more aggressive and have far more success around the basket, but tonight it was really ugly. And what we saw him do in the first quarter was get his teammates in rhythm. He was pretty determined to set up and get into rhythm. Markieff Morris, Dennis Schroeder, he basically dished around to get open threes for guys throughout the starting lineup. And just about all of them did not have what he was looking for. Markieff Morris did make his three. It was in rhythm. It was open. He made it. I just think defensively, he can't really hang in this series. He doesn't have a good place to go with how much the Suns are moving and passing the ball and playing in space offensively. And he's just not enough of a shooter or offensive threat at all where the Suns have to really guard him. So he only played 10 minutes. I thought he would start. I don't think he'll start game six. I think we will probably see Kyle Kuzma is my guess, although we could be in for many changes. We could see Alex Caruso in that starting lineup as well. The end of what we saw in that first quarter, though, was that LeBron didn't seem to trust his teammates, but also couldn't attack, and that's why you saw things devolve. The Lakers had 16 turnovers in this game altogether. They were 12 of 35 from deep, 35% overall from the field, and their offense looked horrid. So, will anyone else step up? Dennis Schroeder was 0 of 9. 0 of 9 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3, his worst game of the series by far. He was huge in games 2 and 3 as the Lakers won those and took a lead in the series. He was passing up shots. He was just, when LeBron did not have it in terms of getting downhill and setting up other Lakers, Schroeder was not capable of filling that void for this team. One assist in this game for him, only played 26 minutes. So, is it going to be him? Can he find a way with LeBron not taking the pressure off of him to succeed? We've seen Schroeder mostly in his career be a Robin, a tertiary option, a secondary option alongside Chris Paul last year, LeBron this year, even dating back to Atlanta when he was a sixth man and had very little on his plate. So I don't know if it's going to be him. Is it going to be Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who left the game and might not play again in game six? He had a right knee contusion, if I'm remembering correctly. Will it be Kyle Kuzma, who's been ice cold from three, but has been getting into the paint a little bit? Somebody else has to step up, because I don't think LeBron can do it by himself looking like he does. We saw in the third quarter, Gasol and Caruso start the half in place of KCP and Drummond. I believe we actually also saw Wes Matthews in that starting unit as well in place of Morris. So it was LeBron, Gasol, Schroeder, Caruso, and Matthews. Very small, LeBron at the four, Gasol at the five. That's something that I think we could see more of, those super small lineups. There's a few ways to do that. I would expect that whether Caldwell-Pope plays or not, and I actually just think he probably won't, but either way, I think Alex Caruso has to start. So whether you're downsizing and having Schroeder, KCP, and Caruso with LeBron and Drummond in the front court, or you end up having to have somebody else in there for Caldwell-Pope in addition to Caruso playing in that starting unit, probably Kuzma in that case. Maybe we see Gasol start. I think we're in for some changes. I think that start to the second half was illustrative of what they could be. Gasol obviously gets into foul trouble. So rotation-wise and Lakers strategy-wise, that's where I see it. I think the other thing to just briefly talk about, and we'll have more tomorrow. I'm not sure who I will bring on. I know I will get a guest, though, for you to preview game six in more detail. But another thing I just think that has to be mentioned here is the resolve of this Suns team. And we talked about it with Brandon on Monday after the game four win on Sunday. And the resolve, the resiliency, whatever you want to say, I talked about it a little bit more with Gina this morning. And overall, it's just, it can't go understated. I mean, is it injuries? Yeah. Yes. You're seeing Anthony Davis leave this series. He was not himself in game four and was missed in this game. LeBron James has not really been himself in any capacity for the entirety of the series. And as I just said, that's severely limiting what the Lakers are able to do. But at the same time, we've seen hurt LeBron do stuff that humans aren't supposed to be able to do, that basketball players are not supposed to be able to do. We've seen far worse LeBron teams, I think, than this do far more damage than a first round exit, right? So it still takes a lot of something for the Suns to fight the way that they have without their leader and their playmaker for the majority of the series, at least at his best. And so that's where I come down. It's going to take an immense performance in game six or seven, whatever it is, to win one of these two games will be probably the hardest thing that most of the players on this roster have ever done in their NBA careers. Jay Crowder has never won a title. He has made it to the finals. He has won some hard-fought series. Same can be said for Chris Paul, who has not made that finals. But Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, all of these guys, these young players, campaign. This is going to be the hardest thing they've ever done. But I think that they've shown us that they are not afraid of this Lakers team. They believe to their souls that they can win this game, this series, and that they have what it takes on the floor to do that. They can trust in what has worked all season, and they've shown that that will work in this series. This is not something where they have to abandon all their principles and get desperate or get nervous or get anxious or any of these things. They can win. They can just play their game and win. They have the mentality and they have the scheme and they have the talent to do that. I just want to shout out one play here before we wrap up, which is Mikal Bridges' dunk, putback dunk on Andre Drummond's head with 8 minutes or so to go in the first quarter. That was really the turning point in that first quarter and ultimately became the turning point in the game for the Suns. It was a missed three, I believe, and then it turned into Mikal Bridges just swooping in. I don't even know how he got his hands on the ball when Drummond was right there. Puts it back, while he's in the air on top of Drummond, and the game turned from there. Gasol got a second foul a couple moments later, and then that was really what spurred the Suns' 14-0 run to go up 19-10 and then never look back. So that, to me, I talked about the Devin Booker dunk in game one on Talen Horton-Tucker, or the block on Tucker, and then the dunk on the other end that turned that game around and gave the Suns the momentum. I think that Bridges dunk was the example today. They can find those plays, not to mention all the praise I lauded onto campaign for the energy and hustle and walking run that he brings to the rotation. So this is winnable. This is a situation that the Suns are ready for, that they can make the most of, and that they have shown the ability to overcome. And they also have home court advantage. They only need to win one of two. It's a tough thing in sports. It's a tough thing in the NBA. It always feels easier than it actually is, but they've shown it. They've proven it. They did it again tonight, and we should be optimistic. Enjoy your Tuesday or your Wednesday or whenever you're listening to this, folks, and I will be back with you tomorrow. Subscribe while you're at it so you get that show right to your feed without worrying or wondering where it is. And let's get it. Let's get our way to game six. It can't come soon enough.